RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Wednesday Hump Day Val and
Wednesday Beans. It's Wednesday.
Yeah, and just so you don't know, many of you probably have not read the latest article on DNYUZ.com. Headline: A Biden landslide? Some Democrats can't help whispering.
Yeah, they're whispering, all right, in their freaking dreams.
So let's just please, everybody, stay sober.
They're starting to like drip out the fact that Biden's probably not going to win, or it's very, very close, to save their credibility, the pollsters, you know?
It's tightening up.
Yeah.
It's tightening up. You know what it is, Tracy? It's one of those things where it's almost like cutting and bulking. Anybody out there who's ever been really deep into fitness and all that stuff, and you wanted to gain muscle mass, you go into a bulking phase where you really pack on the calories, overdo it with the protein, the good fats, all that stuff, and you go into really heavy training. And then, of course, after a period of maybe a month or so, you start going and you switching up the training style, and you switch up your diet to then start cutting away to see what you have actually built up and how you can trim away all that fat and see what you've actually built up underneath. What they've done, what it seems to me, is it's been an entire year of, oh, wow, Trump is floundering and Joe Biden is rising out of nowhere. And now, of course, it's the cutting. Well, there seems to be a tightening now. No. It's always been bad for you. But they're just trying to make it so that there wasn't a completely dejected year for the base. That was it. They didn't want people dejected for an entire calendar year because they already destroyed their livelihoods with the virus response.
I mean, there is just so much going on right now. Like, so much. I don't. It's one of those. First of all, I have to say I'm so happy right now because of what am I doing? I'm sitting in my own chair, in my own studio, in my own house, and I have not been here for more than two consecutive days and weeks. So I'm just happy that I'm here. Sorry, guys, about the past two Monday shows. I will tell you right now, this last Monday was not a planned miss, but it is well worth it, and you will know why very shortly. So don't even worry about that. You're going to be like, oh, that's fine. Don't worry.
Even trade.
More than an even trade.
Value added.
Much, much more. So it's going to be really good. And we've got the laptop thing to talk about today. This last night, the Rudy Giuliani on Newsmax talking about the text messages he sent to his dad. And not just that, but like how the journalists handled it. Second of all, how some people handled it. And it ties in, believe it or not, to Tubin.
Really? Because I was going to say, we're going to leave out the biggest story of the year?
No, I mean,
Jeffrey Tubin?
Listen, and we're also today, Frank, I really want to dedicate the time on the show to going through Patrick Byrne's story. Because if you're on the internet right now, you can go to uncoverdc.com and find this post that we put up, this article we wrote, which summarizes the 50,000-word blog post of Patrick Byrne into, like, a little under 3,000 words. It's not there.
What do you mean it's not there?
Are you looking for it?
I'm going to Uncover DC right now.
I didn't publish it yet. It will be published by 2:30.
Oh, okay. I was going to say. How did I forget? This is not a live show.
So I want to go through it.
Okay.
So let's start with Tubin. The man was caught yanking the wanker on a Zoom meeting with his colleagues. The Zoom meeting he was participating in, from all intents and purposes, seems to have been a transition integrity project Zoom meeting.
That's the whole coup thing.
Yes. So he gets I don't know. Like Lee Smith did an op-ed, and I gotta find it now because I didn't have it handy. But he did an op-ed at Spectator. I don't know if you saw it. Did you?
No.
I'm gonna find it right now. I gotta read this part. It's right in the beginning. Hold on. Come on. Hold on. Pausing it. So this is in his piece. Lee tweets, New Yorker writer Jeffrey Toobin is a man much wronged. He's being punished for having the precise response that the coup porn was designed to elicit. And he says this, Toobin masturbated during a Zoom video conference in which he and his colleagues fantasized about forcibly removing Donald Trump from office and throwing him in jail. In other words, Toobin is being punished for having the precise response that the exercise was designed to elicit.
Oh, I have to read that off tonight on my show, too.
It is so
perfect.
Good.
Perfect. I did not know that that's what he was on a Zoom meeting for. I can't believe it. The ones that put out pretty much what the Axios article was put on out on and what it led to. Oh, wow.
Yes.
What irony.
So the title of this piece is Jeffrey Toobin's Stroke of Misfortune. And the subtitle is he is not the first journalist to get overexcited about coup porn. So apparently, the article is just amazing. It'll be in the show notes. Frank, I'll give it to you so that you could talk about it tonight. Lee Smith is a freaking genius. I love him. He's just so good. And the reason why this equates to what happened yesterday is... So breaking. We all know what's been going on with this laptop, right? So there were three laptops. Two of them left. One of them stayed. Now Ukraine. There's hints Ukraine. I'm just going to tell everybody, please, 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 please. I beg of you, don't just start running wild with the next thing that somebody says without knowing if it has some basis in reality. I have seen this over the past 2 weeks happen over and over again. I have no idea at this point in time whether or not that the rumor is true that Joe Biden or Hunter Biden is on video doing horrible things to Chinese minors. This is the rumor that's floating out there. Nobody has mentioned anything about this that has seen the laptop. There's enough bad crap on there. So last night, Giuliani goes on with Newsmax. And I'm listening to the clip and it's stunning. I mean, we're going to listen to it right now. But Frank, listen to the way this newsman... I forget his name. I don't even know. Handles this and what he says. It's really here.
A text message. Well, this is really a very, very sensitive one. There's a text message to his father in which he says the following. And he's discussing his sister-in-law, who for quite some time was his lover. And he says, she told my therapist that I was sexually inappropriate. This would be with a unnamed 14-year-old girl. When she says that I FaceTime naked with the unnamed 14-year-old girl, and the reason I can't have her out to see me is because I'll walk around naked smoking crack, talking Tom girls on FaceTime. When she was pressed, she said that the unnamed 14-year-old girl never said anything like that, but the bottom line is that I created and caused a very unsafe environment for the kids. This is supported by numerous pictures of underage girls.
So, Mr. Mayor, that's dynamite stuff, and I've seen
I
it.
I turned it over to the...
You turned it over to the Delaware State Police, correct?
Yes, yesterday, Bernie Kerik and I turned it over to the Delaware State Police because we're very uncomfortable with this. We're very uncomfortable with the fact that these underage girls were not protected.
So here's the deal. Hunter Biden, let's face it, he's never going to be elected to anything. And he'll probably wind up in jail someday for something. Who knows? But I'm more concerned about the vice president because he's...
That's it. Stop.
Wow. Newsman.
It's going to go on. It's going to go on more. But I'm sitting here listening to this, saying to myself, what? Did you hear what he just said? And you're more concerned about the vice president? So I'm going to tie this back to Tubin's. It's going to be magic. Just wait. Here.
The one who's running. Right. I see that. But you know what I don't see, Mr.?
He's the sense of the vice president.
Here's the deal. And look, I want to be clear here.
Sounds like him.
Yeah, but you know what is not there?
To him. What did he do about it?
Exactly.
What did he do about it?
Well,
for 3 years.
Mr. Mayor, the only thing is, in that, hold on a second. In the text messaging you just showed me and we went through, we've got Junior, who is Joe Biden, talking to Hunter Biden. We have no acknowledgement in what we just saw from the vice president. We don't know what he knows or whatever, and this is all family drama. And by the way, it's salacious. It's big time. They could be in trouble.
Salacious?
I'm glad you got it out there.
Did you say salacious?
Salacious. He was going to say salacious.
You ran with the dossier for an entire year? Okay.
This is Newsmax, Frank. Here.
But I want to know, is there anything concrete tying Joe Biden to Burisma money?
Oh, that's it. He's going to start talking about Burisma after Giuliani just went on television and said there is pedophilia on freaking Biden's laptop, and that he was talking to his father in a text about his former lover and brother's husband talking to his therapist, telling her he can't be around kids because he's doing inappropriate things and he gets naked and he's smoking crack. And that's nothing, Frank. I'm really, really more concerned with Burisma.
But even so, the Burisma thing, there's so much more information on that. That's the first trove that we got. And it's not anonymous sources. I mean, we see money, we see percentages, we see text messages that implicate that Hunter Biden got 20% on top of everybody else's 10 because 50% of his share has to go to somebody else up the chain, and it just may be his father, who everybody seems to be very keen on meeting with all the time to use influence to make one thing or another go their way. It's just, and it's all in emails, and it's all.
And it's being corroborated now by the other person in the emails who gave their information to Peter Schweizer and another reporter, and is now being moved from where he was at in federal custody to a different location. Oh my goodness. Listen, I wasn't going to say this or type it or write it down because it's a little bit classless in a way. You'll see what I mean when I say it, because I just got to get it out there. I do not put it past these people to have Hunter Biden turn up dead of some apparent overdose or some kind of nonsense, and then for them to be like, oh my God, Joe lost his son, it's a horrible day, and use that to try and shift the away from this absolutely bombshell story for so many different reasons. Not just because it's Joe Biden running for president, but because this isn't going to happen, but if God forbid he were to win, the national security threat that this man is at this point, he can't even get a clearance given what's going on around him right now. And he's going to be the president? And people are like, oh, it's just his son. It's just, no. If Don Trump Jr. were in this precarious position right now, what do you think would be happening?
You can't ask logical questions. You can't ask fair questions like that of this society. You can't. It's a very fair question. It really is.
Hurry up and vote.
Not only that, but you can imagine why the hurry up and vote.
I mean, everybody's saying it. Buttigieg, Kamala, Clinton. Hurry up. Get out there. Make sure you vote early.
Make sure you vote early so you don't see anything that makes you change your mind.
Yeah.
We got to get you on the books quick. What was I going to say now?
Logical question?
No, it was before that. Oh, Hunter, I've had a friend of mine actually said, I wouldn't be surprised if Hunter Biden shows up, turns up dead as a way of getting Joe to say, I'm not going to be doing the debates. And, you know, and the other thing there for me is not to get conspiratorial here about there's something spooky going on. But when Hunter Biden showed his face in that short video, what, for the DNC?
When? Recently? Oh, well, the convention?
The convention. Didn't he have a short video? He showed up on.
Yes.
And it's like, I said, I did a double take. I said, wait, that's Hunter Biden? It doesn't look like Hunter Biden. Who is this? It looked like he had a new face.
Really?
Everything. It was weird compared to all the pictures that we got of him in the last year. Very, very weird. So I looked at that and I started thinking, man, is Hunter Biden even a real person anymore? And of course, where has he been? Has anybody had seen anything? Has he given any statements? I've never seen this guy in public anyway.
Well, he was seen in public recently-ish within the past 6 months. There was a picture snapped of him getting into a Corvette or some kind of like high-end car, and everybody went nuts because he was actually going to get into a high-end car, and he was going through that custody battle saying he had no money.
Oh, he's got money, all right.
Yeah, he has got money. And, you know, yesterday I kind of floated the idea on my Twitter, like maybe Hunter left that laptop on purpose. Because the tone and tenor, that can't be true for a gazillion different reasons, by the way, but I was just thinking out loud, positing a thought. You know, obviously he hates his father. His father hates him. That's very clear from the messages. Like, they don't get along. They're probably in a, you know, he's like one of those jaded stepchildren, redheaded stepchildren. Like, his father clearly loved Beau more. It's just very obvious in all the messages. And, you know, especially the one where he sends and he talks about how, you know, I'm not going to make you have to pay for everything for everybody like I've been stuck doing. Like, he's very jaded. And not for nothing that the pedophilia allegations were made. The FBI agent who took the laptop was from that division. Now we have Giuliani going live on television talking about it, and anchors are just like saying, oh, that doesn't really matter. Give me the real goods. Are you kidding me? What has happened to us as a society right now? Not only that, they're back to Tubin. They are literally putting out stories with headlines like, who among us hasn't pleasured themselves during a work Zoom meeting? They're excusing it away as normal.
Is that real?
Yes. Yes. I believe it was CNN. Hold on.
Who hasn't? During a work Zoom meeting.
CNN.
First of all, a work Zoom meeting is a very recent phenomenon. This is something that if you mention, hey, you want to do a Zoom call later on? You told somebody that 6 months ago, most people would say, what the hell is Zoom?
It was BuzzFeed, actually. It was BuzzFeed.
Speaking of dossiers and fan fiction,
I'm trying to find the headline. Hold on. Jeffrey Toobin can't be the only person masturbating on work Zoom calls is the headline.
What the hell does that even matter?
The outlet specifically pointed out how bizarre it is that we haven't read 1,000 stories like this during the pandemic. What? Can you not keep your hands out of your pants when you're in the middle of a meeting at work? I mean, what?
Wait a second. First of all, I mean, who knows how many people across the country have gotten caught doing one thing or another, or have engaged willingly into something. The whole thing here is we're talking about Jeffrey Toobin. We're talking about an esteemed member of the American media, someone who is all in on the moral crusade against Donald Trump.
You mean somebody who has said things like this? That's not it. Hold on. I have a whole montage of him talking about sexual assault and inappropriate actions. And
now, how did this get? Was he actually on with a couple of female colleagues? And he was just openly leaning back and just. Showing them what was going on, or they just assumed?
He thought that he moved the camera down to his area and proceeded.
By accident?
No, he thought he was off the call and on another one. I.e., he was probably just using another Zoom window or thought he was out of that meeting and went into another. He said he went into another call and he thought that the video wasn't on. And I think, to me, the way it was portrayed is that he was engaging with someone on the other end of what he thought was a Zoom call, doing something for them, the way they made it out to seem. Like he was doing something in performance of. Here.
Okay.
It's a minute.
CNN chief legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin reportedly taking some time off after he was allegedly caught masturbating in a Zoom meeting.
Please, God, tell me less.
That's it.
Tell me less.
Should you be civil to people who are credibly accused of sexual assault or sexual harassment?
If you sexually assault someone in high school, your life should be ruined. The accusation is one of, I mean, very serious, like, pawing and touching and gross behavior. I mean, these accusations do not tend to come in single examples. I have a very sophisticated view of this. The women always lose. How about the lives of the women who were sexually assaulted in high school? When Donald Trump talks about any sort of sexual harassment, sexual violence, there is utterly no concern for the woman. It's always 1957, and he's the head of the Rat Pack. Every night, I cry myself to sleep over the fate of white men in America.
Well, there you go. You think he's even thought about touching himself since, or is he just so sick over what's going on right now?
Look, I worry in a lot of ways about people that have this happen to them, because I worry they're going to hurt themselves.
Listen, before we started talking about pedophilia and potential violent abuse, physical abuse that may be coming out over the next couple of days about Hunter Biden, I wasn't necessarily doing a victory lap from seeing these pictures of a man in very much in pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The corruption, the bribery, that stuff interested me. I don't take any pleasure in seeing a person in that much pain, regardless who they are.
I actually agree with you on that. I didn't really care about the crack pipe, to be honest. He's addicted to drugs and he's got issues.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the pain in the man's eyes. It's like, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. And then, of course, a lot of that compassion goes away when you start hearing that, the next level that this may go to is the physical abuse of children. And then you're just like,
screw you. You deserve it.
Screw you. But, when you first see that, I'm just like, man, this is not how a society pushes past any kind of a issue that they have on the plate currently. This is not how you win people over. You don't actually persuade or enlighten anybody to new ways of thinking about how problems can be solved or even diagnosed. If this is the level of our discourse, what pictures do you have of somebody jacking off? You win. That's not how you win an argument. It's,
Well, I mean, we talked about this a lot, by the way, where people are politicizing pedophilia and using it as a cudgel, as though like anybody who talks about it is a crazy far right conspiracy theorist with a tinfoil hat on in their mom's basement. It's happened over and over again. Just recently, we played the clip of him, of Savannah Guthrie assaulting President Trump over the head with, they believe in pedophilia. Like it's some kind of a freaking Santa Claus mystery. When, over and over and over again, we've seen the same thing happen over and over and over, and they have literally weaponized it so that if you talk about it, they can shun you. So that the left now, even in the general, the more hardcore Democrat, thinks that anytime someone talks about pedophilia, you're crazy, you're an idiot, you don't know what you're talking about. And they bring up other things when you mention it. Oh yeah, well, Trump killed 200,000 people with the coronavirus. This man is assaulting children. What is wrong with you? And then you wonder why this happens. Yesterday, the Trump administration announced the first government center for countering human trafficking in the United States. Listen to this press conference.
Okay, for reporters, please wait until we have the microphone to you to be able to answer a question. Please state which outlet, your name and which outlet you're from. Thank you.
No.
Okay. Do we have any questions to start? Do we have any reporters interested in that follow-up questions. Just to be clear, give a couple. Okay, great. Seeing none.
Easy.
There you go.
Great.
Not one question.
Yeah, I can't get jiggy with this shit.
And then I'm in the FOIA releases yesterday because they come up on the DOJ website, like when they release things. And they released a bunch of emails from reporters to Carrie Kupek from the DOJ about the Roger Stone sentencing change. She doesn't respond to any of them. I mean, they're all ridiculous. Here's one from BuzzFeed after she didn't respond to his email. This is Dominic Holden above BuzzFeed. I'm sad you didn't reply to these questions. You gave comments elsewhere. He's sad, Frank. He used the word sad.
Everything that they do is very emotional. They're in touch with their emotions. They become sad when they see society suffering.
Or when they don't get attention.
Don't come on, give us attention.
We're sad. I'm so sad.
I cry myself to sleep every night over how big my heart is. I have such a big heart, and we cry every night together. Our 9 a.m. meetings at the newsroom, that's, we all cry together to get it all out.
Every night, just like Tubin does.
Yeah.
Freaking ridiculous. All right, so we're at 26 minutes or so, and I want to take the time to go through the Patrick Byrne story.
Okay.
It's long. I'm going to try and skim through it, but you're going to stop me with questions if you have them.
You bet. And it's been a long time since I even thought of Patrick Byrne, so I'm just going to sit back, relax, and listen to this.
Okay, so 2005. All right, so we started it out by saying the following facts were taken directly from the blog post written by Patrick Byrne on his website, Deep Capture. Although Uncover DC has summarized the story, we highly recommend reading it in full here along with its sub-stories. Please devote the time to read this and come to your own conclusions. There we go. For 14 months, Byrne has kept the major details of these interactions he had with the FBI hidden. But about 10 days ago, he relayed stunning information about his past and his involvement in what has now come to be known as Spygate. 2005 to 2006, we're going all the way back there. He went to Washington, D.C. to expose Wall Street by stating he believed there was a crack in the national capital market settlement system that led to 200 indictments and more than 100 people going to prison. He spoke with the Senate Judiciary Committee and also the FBI. And during that time, he met a lot with Chairman Arlen Specter. He says in one such meeting, he walked into the room and there was a group of senators waiting for him, led by Specter. And he goes on to explain, they made a speech. They told me that if one understands the constitutional structure, one understands the Senate Judiciary Committee is the bulwark that protects the rule of law for the United States. And that's because the Senate Judiciary Committee has jurisdiction regarding corruption. Anything touched by a civil or criminal penalty. And that their authority to look into corruption trumps the authority of anyone else in government. And given that pretty much any activity one could imagine could be touched by a civil or criminal penalty, in practice, that adds up to, quote, in the name of stopping corruption, the United States Judiciary Committee has the authority to look into anything in the United States of America it desires. That is the Senate Judiciary Committee. So he says, with senators around me nodding from both parties, Specter told me that they agreed with me. They thought I was right about what I had been saying publicly with increasing volume over the past 2 years, that some form of systemic corruption was taking place and taking over the United States government. They weren't even sure what it was, but that it was like a foreign nation subverting our government, yet they couldn't pinpoint it. And they had learned that it couldn't even be fought from within the government. And he says during the meeting with them there, they told him they were giving him a, quote, blanket immunity, where they put this letter that states something like, until his death, the first paragraph had some kind of concern that some sort of deep systemic corruption was infiltrating and corrupting federal institutions. And the second paragraph started with a sentence along the following lines. The United States Senate Committee on the Judiciary requests that Patrick M. Byrne be afforded extraordinary latitude under the laws of the United States of America to pursue his activities investigating and disrupting corruption within the federal government. This is not a pardon, says Spector. You can't go kill anyone. But for the rest of your life, this letter is going to be sitting in a safe at the DOJ, and it'll make extremely unlikely any prosecutor is going to touch you in the future. He says that that letter was verified by two reporters. They were able to get confirmation that that letter was actually real. All right?
Mm-hmm.
2008, he says a law was passed that gave authority to the director of the CIA to sign a piece of paper and basically take the steering wheel of the FBI regarding certain matters. And I think we linked to the, yeah, Sharon found the actual law he's talking about, and it's linked in the piece. So that's real. We tried to corroborate as much as we could. 2015, Patrick Byrne goes to Freedom Fest. You ever hear of it?
I've heard of Freedom Fest, yes.
A bunch of my friends like run that, or used to. A bunch of my former friends run that conference.
I don't go. I don't. There's all these conferences that I, God knows if I'll ever go to any of them, but I've heard of them all.
You'll only go to the ones I drag you to.
Oh, yeah. And they're always very fun.
They always are. You're right. So Patrick Byrne goes to Freedom Fest, meets Maria Butina there, who initially introduces herself as a Russian gun rights advocate. Later on, she says that she is actually special assistant to the vice chairman of the Central Bank of Russia, and admits that she was sent to the conference to meet Byrne specifically. Byrne sets up a lunch meeting for 90 minutes with her at his hotel suite, where the two discuss Russia and her connection with a 93-year-old Russian oligarch named Mikhail Kalashnikov, who asked her to head this gun rights advocacy group. Butina asks him to give a speech to the central bank, wanting him to speak about the blockchain, Milton Friedman, Austrian economics, and a future for U.S. and Russia that is a path besides war. After that, he goes to the authorities because he's got a security clearance, and he feels like he needs to go to the authorities and talk about this. Otherwise, his clearance could be in jeopardy. So he goes, he tells them about it. And then Byrne says, later it was confirmed to me that the news I gave them was received and shared across certain certain circles on July 10th, 2015. That is when the Maria Russian investigation started, not July 2016. There's one part of the cover-up.
Oh.
September 2015. Now, this is like 6 months after President Trump had announced at this point.
How, now, just for people who are going to be reading this today and they're listening to this show first, about how you said it's about 3,000 words, but how long was this read?
Probably about 15 minutes.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Nice little session.
Yeah. It's about 15 minutes, and it's actually 3,900 words, not 3,000. I'm looking at it right now. But this was the only way. I mean, the only way. Nobody has taken the time to read this thing full and understand it. And I had Sharon help me with this, and she did a lot of this work. Basically all of it, actually. I read it like 3 or 4 times, and then I was so busy I couldn't sit down. So she went through and literally pieced it out into a real timeline, because it was written like, fast forward, go back, fast forward, go back. And it was a little harder to understand. So she really took the weekend doing this. So September 2015, he has regular communication with Butina. He's been told basically to establish a, quote, falling in love ruse, which ends up developing into an actual relationship. So he
isn't that always, yeah. It's always one of those things. We need a ruse. It's like one of those high school films from the 90s, like was like She's All That or something.
Yep.
Where you dare the popular guy in school to turn the dorky girl into the prom queen.
Yep.
And he actually falls in love with her, and then she finds out about the plot. He's like, no, I took the money, okay, but I actually do love you now. I tell you, art imitates life.
It's true. It's so funny because there are so many of those movies.
It's so many, and they're all great.
What is the one with Drew Barrymore? That happens to her, doesn't it?
What is that, riding in cars? No.
Drew Barrymore, and she goes back to high school, even though she's a reporter. And she goes back to high school, and she ends up on the baseball mound waiting for him to come out, if he's going to throw the pitch or not. I don't remember the name of it.
I forget, but it happens in like 10 Things I Hate About You, kind of.
Yep.
Which I love that. That's a good one. Lauren loves that one, too. These are the same. They don't make movies like they used to.
Anyway, so then we get, since he contacted them after the July chance meeting, the FBI, with Bettina, they seem to suggest that he should learn more, and then they would decide what they were going to do with the information. So, learn more. They're not sure whether or not they're going to act on this Russian from the central bank or whatever coming in and trying to act as a gun rights advocate. So, keep cozying it up with her. We'll figure it out later on. Don't worry about it. Messages go back and forth for 2 months, he says. Byrne says, in an effort to make things clear, I sent a binary message along the lines of, not wanting to get into hassle with the U.S. government, I'm not going to meet Maria again unless I hear the word green light. And they respond, green light. So he says, okay. So then between November of 2015 and December, Bettina says she gets word from this guy, Alexander Torshin, who's a Russian politician, that four people are going to be in the running for the White House: Clinton, Trump, Rubio, or Cruz. And this guy Torshin allegedly wants her to focus on them so that she could have contacts in a new administration. Not long after that, Bettina mentioned she has a contact in the Clinton camp and is now actively working on the other three. So here's a Russian working on three of the political, four of the political candidates. Right? By December 2015, Byrne says he was having regular face-to-face meetings with the FBI to discuss Bettina and how they move forward. In late 2015, two FBI agents that Byrne was familiar with from Wall Street told him, we need you to shift working on something more important. Shift to working on something more important. The Bureau is setting up Hillary Clinton in a sting. We need you to arrange a bribe for her. There are two groups in the FBI investigating the Clintons. There's a group looking into her emails, but we think that that's a whitewash. There's also a group of agents in New York City looking into her finances, and they want to put her ass in a stir. According to Byrne, the agents tell him, Comey had been blocking such aggressive investigative techniques, i.e. a sting, claiming there was insufficient predicate acts to establish that she had a prior disposition to commit a crime, right? But recently, say the FBI agents, information had come in that Hillary had accepted a bribe in the low tens of millions of dollars. They told me who it was from, a foreign government, and how it was done. The FBI agents in New York had leveraged that information to force Comey to sign off on setting Hillary Clinton up in a bribery sting. And now those same agents were asking for Byrne's help. It was believed that a different foreign government of a country he said he never went to, mm-hmm. wanted to pay Hillary a bribe in the teens of millions in return for having Hillary privately pledge what one aspect of a president Hillary's policy towards their nation would be. His assignment was to create the following. Within 2 months, Hillary Clinton and that government's bagman are to be somewhere alone together in a room for 10 minutes. You take it from there, Byrne. So he's supposed to engineer this meeting between Clinton and this bagman from whatever country this is we're talking about here.
Mm.
The assignment broke down into steps A through D, with D being Hillary Clinton walks into a room alone and spends 10 minutes with a bagman. He got A, B, and C done. And then he says Hillary was 13 hours from walking into a room alone using a method which would keep any record from appearing on her calendar or schedule to spend 10 minutes with that government's bagman where that government's desires would be expressed and money offered. He wasn't in the room when it happened, couldn't say for sure that it happened over those next 13 hours. Days later, FBI comes back, scrub the mission completely, forget the entire conversation took place. You have to erase this from your memory, they tell him, right? And then they said, Clinton is going to be our next president. Nothing can stop that. The day she becomes president, the first thing she's going to do is send her people over to the FBI and find out who was part of investigating her, and we're all going to be destroyed. That includes you. The mission has been scrubbed from the highest level. This is what he's saying.
Wow.
Now we're in 2016. We're getting there.
Wow.
Byrne says after several weeks, he requests another meeting with the FBI. He wants more clarity. The agents say this to him. What's going on here, Patrick, is that at this point, President Obama has his people across the federal bureaucracy, but especially Department of Justice. Hillary's going to be president for 8 years and nothing's going to stop that. But while she's president, the evidence about the bribery you were a part of gathering is going to be sitting on a Bunsen burner inside the DOJ. And the hand on that Bunsen burner is going to be the hand of one Barack Obama's people. If Hillary's a good girl, defends Obamacare, etc., that hand will keep the Bunsen burner on low. If she's a bad girl, starts thinking for herself, that hand will turn the Bunsen burner to high. That way, for the 8 years she's president, Hillary will be managed by Barack Obama. Then she will step down and Michelle would run. And Patrick, that's the plan. This is what Patrick Byrne says was told to him. He says, I got it. And then he thinks to himself, I am going to completely screw this up for them the moment I get a chance. Because it was like, I guess, overwhelming for him to think that this was actually happening.
Well, it's one of those things where you can go only so far in life in reading about how bad things are in government or bad things are anywhere, even if it's a corporation that, you know, anything that has taken on the feeling and the weight of a country. You know, there are some corporations out there that are more more powerful than many countries put together. And it's one, you know, you always hear about being able to see the sausage get made.
Mm-hmm.
And just reading about what it's really all like. Like for us, if we go and, you know, we put on Netflix years ago when House of Cards came out, you're like, wow, this must be what it's like. It's another thing to actually come face to face with it.
Yeah.
And say, oh, I'm actually touching this thing now. I'm in contact with it. So it really must be something else to have a firsthand experience that removes all doubt.
So listen, it's not like Patrick Byrne is some anonymous guy telling a story on the chans. I mean, he's the former CEO of Overstock, multi-billionaire, I guess. I don't even know. But like, it's not like he's a nobody, right? He's putting his face and name out there and saying these things and putting his credibility on the line. So it's a little bit more weighty than somebody anonymous going, you know what I'm saying? And I don't have any reason to disbelieve anything he's saying. There's been enough corroboration for me that I'm like, okay, well, here, off we go. 2016, Byrne gets an invitation to sit with one of the Republican presidential candidates. Feds tell him to take Butina with him for the meeting. By having her sit in and observe even the first 10 minutes of the meeting, it probably allowed them to get a FISA warrant to surveil the candidate. That's what he says. In March 2016, Butina tells Byrne she may have an opportunity to meet with Donald Trump Jr. at a convention of conservatives in the South. He knows of the time and place of the meeting, tells the FBI that he should probably say, let me whisk you off to the Bahamas for the weekend so that this doesn't happen. FBI tells him, back off, let the meeting with Butina and Don Trump Jr. happen. They knew that Butina was breaking the law by having these meetings and acting as an unregistered foreign agent. That they knew she was having them all along before she had them. From him. They let it all happen on purpose. They played dumb and let all these meetings with this supposed, you know, with this Russian asset, this Russian agent, this Russian person happen so that they would have this as a backup. I'm just trying to find. So then the FBI takes a look at Butina, tells Byrne. Butina wants Byrne to go overseas and make a speech in Russia. Okay. He goes to the agents and talks to them. They say, well, Butina's been analyzed. She's just another grad student, but going to Russia to meet Putin is too dangerous. We want you to break up with her. Get her out of your life. He breaks up with her over a text message, right? Then in July of...
It's not you, it's me.
Right, basically. Then they ask him to rekindle his relationship with her and that they couldn't believe that they were being asked to ask him to do that because it was so unethical. And that if he didn't want to do it, then that would be fine. But basically start up a relationship with her again so we can use it to use her, for lack of a better word. Mm. He agreed to continue the relationship. But he personally didn't engage in any activity with her that would be like, he didn't have any sexual activity with her. They never slept in the same room. You know, he didn't do the full-fledged, like, let me sleep with this girl and make her think that we're together. He like didn't do any of that and stepped
back.
It was
just like courting.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Just some light courting.
Yes. And Bettina has been on record saying that Patrick Byrne has never treated her in a poor way. Like, he always treated her with respect and like a lady, etc. 2017, she wants to come live with him in Utah and finish her degree there. Agents tell him break it off with her again so she stays in D.C. Tell him they're learning a lot by watching her because she's having dinners with people and posting photos about it on Facebook and they can see who she's meeting with and when. He thinks that he offered her up as like accidentally without realizing it as a pawn and they took the opportunity to use her. He says Russiagate isn't about Trump. It's a setup on the Republican Party that was crafted in 2015. Trump came along, won the nomination, and then the White House, but along the way crashed into a pre-canned scandal that was in the works before he was president, before he was nominee, and quite possibly before he even declared.
Jeez.
It's a manifestation of corruption at the highest reaches of our federal government. They set up a bribery, blackmail, soft coup on Hillary, and they prepackaged a Russiagate scandal such that any day they wanted to, they could grab that can of scandal, shake it up, crack it open, and spray it all over the Republican Party. I say this as the guy they had bribing Hillary and shagging Maria Bettina, so I think I know where from I speak. That's what he says. He leaves Overstock in 2019. He leaves because he knows he's going to have to come public with all this stuff and doesn't want it to affect the company. He says he thinks I thought it might have been in the shareholders' interest to complete the retail U-turn, then punch out, divorcing myself from the firm so he could go public as he did on Fox and CNN a little over a year ago. Yeah.
Remember that. Yeah. No, wasn't that like 2 years ago? Wasn't that 2017?
No, it was 2018.
18.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
It might have even been 2019, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
It felt like so long ago. So long ago, but after the election, of course, when we were really starting to see things get shaken up and rocks kicked over and realized just how deep of a rabbit hole this was going to be. And I remember people questioning, you know, he seemed really frantic.
Yeah.
People didn't know whether or not he was on substances or something like that. But
no. No.
Just a hyper guy?
Yeah. And not even really hyper at that. And between me and you and some people out there, we might get an opportunity to show the listeners just how normal he actually is next week.
That would be really, really fascinating. Because I'll tell you, people have brought him up a couple of times to me in private. Like I get emails all the time and more than one person has said, "Hey Frank, you ever wonder what ever happened to that Patrick Byrne guy?"
Well, because
we
were the only ones who covered it, Frank. We were really the only ones who really did anything in depth with it. We did a whole podcast episode on it.
Yeah, and I think that it just also his little chapter or his segment of a chapter in the history of the last 4 years was something that made some considerable waves when he was making those appearances on television. And, you know, everybody's thinking, whoa, I mean, from the CEO of Overstock, we may get a big story about the Russia scam and all that stuff and where this all originated from. And like, wow. And I remember that was a couple of weeks worth of appearances on television shows and just kind of. Almost like he hit the mattresses or something like that.
Well, he started writing on his blog. So inside his blog piece, there's like so many links to other things he's written about. And there are a lot of them. Like there's a lot of information on his blog that you guys should read. Like he's really poured it out. He's told, and there is no question. You can do the research, guys. This, all the stuff that he did in 2006 was legit. I mean, he really, this man's life has been unbelievably interesting. I mean, he's been through several illnesses. He's beaten cancer, hepatitis, all kinds of stuff. I mean, his story is really incredible. Like if you were to randomly meet him somewhere, because I did a lot of research into him because some people like to, you know, see what they're dealing with, right? So I spent a lot of time doing research into Patrick Byrne to see if he was really legit. And I also spent a lot of time talking to people that knew Patrick Byrne to see if he was really legit. And not only that, watching him on television, I knew he was because you could see it. You know, you could feel it. And that's not enough to go on. But for me, it's the very first thing. If I look at you and talk to you and there's just something doesn't sit right inside my belly, I know there's a good chance you're full of it. That I did not get with him at all. So, not that I'm like the authority on it, but you know how it is. You talk to people, you get a feeling.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, he ends. There's more, but he ends, basically. He says, the first thing that happens is John Durham's going to finish investigating everything you just read here. I bet he has a lot of other threads, but I bet the soft coup is one of the more important. I wished again to caution the reader against at this point believing that President Obama or Michelle were a part of this. It feels more like a CIA director than a community organizer to me. And since this is such a hall of mirrors, it's entirely possible that some entirely different group within the government rigged the whole thing up. A deep state, if you will. So let us see what Mr. Durham has found. For what you have just read, dear reader, is a written version of the story I told the Justice Department last April. This is what they're investigating, among other wicked allegations, I'm sure. But I can promise you, dear reader, it is true. And then the end of it ends this way. To the shade of Chairman Arlen Specter and to those other Senate institutionalists, living or dead, who summoned me alone to a room in Washington, D.C. one Indian summer day in 2006. And to the 325 million people who elected them, I have a final comment. You told me to find you the deep state. I found you the deep state. When's the movie coming out?
When is it? It's pretty much like he put it, like he was a little piece of meat, jumped into the center of the Venus flytrap.
For real. It's some story.
It is. It is.
I'm working on talking with him here with us on the podcast. So,
well, I look forward to seeing what you can manage. Because this would definitely be a story worth brushing up on, seeing how much contemporary value there is, given that, especially if there is an electoral victory by Donald Trump in the cards over the next 2 weeks, then it needs to be go time. In February, it needs to be go time.
Geez, it needs to be go time in December.
Well, I don't know. Depending on what kind of a makeup of Congress, depending on what the makeup of Congress is going to be, if you win the House as well, you may want to wait until after inauguration to start doing some bigger stuff, because you want to be able to make sure that those committees are in the hands of competent people.
Can you imagine if Devin Nunes takes back the Hipsy?
I know.
Oh, my God. Please.
I'm telling you, that's what I'm saying. You know, depending on what it is, if the Democrats keep the House and Republicans maintain the Senate in a comfortable way and they reclaim the White House for four more years, then yeah, I say go ahead, make December, just carpet bomb everybody in December, because what are you going to do? But if you have a Congress that's going to be inaugurated in January, that's going to be friendly to you, then I don't know, enjoy the holidays and just prepare everything that you got for when you have it all.
Goodness. I'm fantasizing about us taking back the House by a nice margin and keeping the Senate. And there is no excuses for these people. The American people will not tolerate inaction if we have both houses, both bodies again.
Well, I mean, the powers that be are trying to do everything they can. You saw what John Roberts did yesterday.
Oh, yeah. That? With freaking, what was it? North Carolina?
No, Pennsylvania.
Oh, Pennsylvania. Yeah, with the pretty deadline.
Yeah, pretty much Pennsylvania, the powers that be in Pennsylvania, they pretty much have 72 hours to figure out how many votes they need to overcome Donald Trump, pretty much. Because they said that even ballots with bad postage or that don't seem to be postmarked or postmarked in like inefficient ways, they need to be also counted.
Listen,
within 3 days, unless there's a preponderance of evidence that there is some kind of foul play. I like preponderance. Yeah, okay. I'm sure they're going to investigate every last one of these unsolicited mail-in ballots.
Well, I mean, the thing is, again, Frank, we're getting turnout numbers and all kinds of stuff like that right now. And Larry's been doing a great job with all that, like going through the numbers, how many people have voted, what the percentages are. He's calling Florida as a blowout for Republicans. Like, we're going to.
I've been hearing that.
Yeah, we're going to just completely destroy the state of Florida. Like,
well, when you capture the Latino vote, like you've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, and who, obviously, you have to go out there and vote. But once again, what were we looking at in 2016? Where was the enthusiasm, and where was the enthusiasm completely lacking? There was nothing there. It's 100 times that 4 years later.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so Larry's going through all that. And all I'm going to say is that what this basically means is that they're not going to have enough votes, Frank. The in-person turnout at this point is going to be so huge that they're not going to be able to have 10,000 votes come in at the end of the day because they already hit 97, 98, 99% of the, you know what I'm saying? The precinct reporting.
Yep.
They're not going to be able to do it. They know it. I'm telling you, they're setting it up right now. They absolutely know. They know. They know. The maker of the prescription painkiller OxyContin will plead guilty to 3 federal criminal charges in relation to its role in the opioid crisis as part of a settlement of more than $8
billion. $8 billion. Oxys, they have really ruined people.
You know, they should do the same thing for vaccines.
Imagine that. If there's any accountability for vaccines. Yeah. Nope.
I don't understand. Before we end here, Frank, I don't get why he keeps pushing this vaccine thing, knowing he's got to know that 99% of his base is like, we don't, this whole military vaccine thing freaks us out and we don't like it. I can't.
I don't know why either. I don't know why either, because within the last 10 years alone, he has expressed skepticism about vaccines
over and over again
in very good ways too, to ask about injury rates and what's not being reported and where accountability is and why. Now I say, well, listen, this is all about the election. You cannot at this point paint yourself in any way, shape, or form worse than they're already going to paint you. And if you start going head on against vaccines and all that, you're going to be called one thing or another, conspiracy president, this and that. I know it's already stacked against him. Maybe he's just mitigating whatever he can. And he is just, I don't know. We'll see after if he wins handily and he's back in the White House and he's still talking about this shit when the election's behind him, then I'm just going to chalk it up to really, once again, really bad advisors.
Yeah.
Really bad advising. I don't think that, you know, he was listening to the advice of people like Dr. Fauci. Why? Because,
what's interesting about that is people are like, oh, look, Dr. Fauci's agreeing that Trump did a great job. And I'm like, listen, people, the only reason he's agreeing that Trump did a great job is because Trump knew exactly how to play this little sniveling twit. He knew that he was going to listen to exactly what he said and there was going to be documented record of it, so that when it came time to criticize his coronavirus response, if Fauci came out and criticized it, President Trump could pull out the email with all the things that Fauci said to do and say, he told me to do all this stuff. Put him in a rock and a hard place.
Exactly. And what are you going to do at that point, since the entire country deified Anthony Fauci?
Mm-hmm.
Deified him.
Yep. Yep. And there's so much more we could talk about. We're going to have to wait until Friday. So we'll have the debate to talk about Friday, Frank.
Oh, when's the debate?
Thursday.
What time does that start?
I don't know. I think 9. What's the matter?
We'll see.
I can see Frank, but he can't see me because I don't put my camera on because I'm smart. And I could see him in his chair moving back and forth with his little bee hat on and his little headphones and his sweatshirt.
They're not little. No, my headphones are not little.
They're big, you're right.
They have to cover the entire ear.
You know what he's not doing, right?
I'm not tubing.
No.
I'm not tubing. That's what I'm not doing.
You've been listening to the Dark Delight Podcast with
Wednesday Hump Day Val and
Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. Until Friday.
Later.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on any of our programming, or if you have some show ideas you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you take time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means more than you could ever know. Without you, the listener, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to all of our programming. You can find all of Radio Influence's programming on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.